There's a sense in which every Christian should be reckless when it comes to the will of God.
For decades, Elizabeth Elliot has influenced many people through her books, timeless teaching, and courageous faith. She shares with us what she's learned as a daughter, wife, mother, and missionary on this radio program, Gateway to Joy. Let's join Elizabeth now as she encourages us once again to live life to its fullest as disciples of Jesus Christ.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about a reckless prayer. I mentioned to you a few days ago that when my husband Jim was killed, I prayed what seemed to me a reckless prayer. Jim had been killed by a people called Aucas, savages to whom he had hoped to take the gospel. And it did not seem really very logical that if five young, strong American men, three of whom had had arms, had been killed in such an attempt, it did not seem at all likely that God was going to ask a widow with a baby to do anything about it. But my prayer was, Lord, if by chance there is something that you want me to do about the Aucas, and my parenthesis and my footnotes said, but I really don't think there could possibly be, Lord, you wouldn't ask me to do a thing like that, would you? It would be ridiculous. But I finished my prayer by saying, I'm available. Lord, here I am, available. The old word to wreck, from which we get our more familiar word reckless, R-E-C-K, to wreck means to take heed, care, or thought for. So a reckless prayer is one which doesn't seem to take heed or care or thought. And there's a sense in which every Christian should be reckless when it comes to the will of God, because our own safety is not our concern. How valuable do you consider your own life to be to you? Are you concerned with your own thing, your own comfort, your own success, your own hopes and desires? Do you want to feel good about yourself? Or can you say with Paul, I don't consider my own life valuable to me so long as I can finish my course? That's what really matters, to be able to do the thing that we were made to do, to glorify the one who made us, and to please him. And we can be sure that if we please him, then we ourselves will find joy, the kind that really lasts. Jim and I had been the only missionaries in Shandia at that time, and now that Jim was gone, I was going to try to do everything that Jim and I together had done before. Obviously, I couldn't possibly do it, but I was busy. I was very busy. And I had a baby. My daughter was 10 months old, so there were things to do to take care of her, take care of the house. I was teaching a literacy class for a group of Quechua Indian girls. I had a certain amount of medical work to do, not having had any medical training, but I did know how to give worm medicine and penicillin shots and deliver a baby and bind up a wound. But I was saying, Lord, I'm available if that's what you want me to do. And I mentioned a few days ago a motto which is posted in every Coast Guard station along the East Coast. It says, you have to go out. You don't have to come back. No matter how great the storm, how great the danger, how unlikely the possibility of rescuing a ship in trouble may seem to be, the obligation of the Coast Guard is to go out. It is not their obligation to make sure that they can get back before they go out. I think also of a motto which I heard is one of the Zulu tribes people. To go forward is to die. To go back is to die. Let us go forward. So it was a reckless prayer, reckless in the proper sense. But I went ahead with the work that I had to do in the station of Shandia. just praying each day for God's guidance and every now and then mentioning to him the possibility of going to the Alcas. Others had carried on the gift drops from the small airplane. Missionary Aviation Fellowship pilots were continuing to drop gifts to the Alcas so that they would understand that even though they had killed some of us, that we were not angry, we still loved them, and we still wanted to win their friendship. And so I prayed now and again, not really imagining any possible way in which God could ask me to do anything about this. But I was thinking, as I read the book of Nehemiah, how there was a fast, and the law was read by Ezra, and the covenant was renewed. And they reviewed the history of Israel, how God had torn the sea apart for them, guided them by a pillar of cloud in the daytime and a pillar of fire at night to give them light on the road. He had given them right judgments and true laws and statutes and commandments, which were good. Thou gavest them bread from heaven to stay their hunger, and thou broughtest water out from a rock for them to quench their thirst. And thou didst bid them enter and take possession of the land which thou hadst solemnly sworn to give them. But they, our forefathers, were arrogant and stubborn and disobeyed thy commandments. They refused to obey and did not remember the miracles which thou didst accomplish among them. They remained stubborn, and they appointed a man to lead them back to slavery in Egypt. But thou art a forgiving God, gracious and compassionate, long-suffering and ever constant, and thou didst not forsake them. Even when they made the image of a bull calf in metal, and said, This is your God who brought you up from Egypt, and were guilty of great blasphemies, thou in thy great compassion didst not forsake them in the wilderness. The pillar of cloud did not fail to guide them on their journey by day, nor the pillar of fire by night to give them light on the road by which they traveled. Thou gavest them thy good spirit to instruct them. Thy manna thou didst not withhold from them, and thou gavest them water to quench their thirst. Here's a picture of a loving, forgiving, merciful God. When I look back on my diaries of that period of my life, late 1956 and 57, I find a person who is still eager and longing to serve God, but I find so many ways in which I failed, so many ways in which I was less than obedient, ways in which I felt sorry for myself. And yet the Lord didn't leave me alone. He continued to guide me. He gave me all that I needed, bread, water, land, pillar of fire. And yet, how wistfully I wished sometimes that God would give me a pillar of fire, some visible sign to which I could point my friends and say, look, this is how God is leading me. Well, the time came when I got a radio message one morning asking if I would be willing to go to the station of Arahuno to spend the weekend with a woman whose husband was going to be away for that weekend. She didn't like to stay in the jungle alone, and I couldn't help but be a little amused that a wife who didn't want to spend the weekend alone would want a widow to come and accompany her. And my response was not very positive to begin with, but I thought I really better ask the Lord about this. And so I prayed, and it seemed to me that God was saying, yes, I want you to go. And so, against my own will, I went to Arahuno, and I hadn't been there more than a day or two when two Quechua Indians arrived at the door, saying that there were two Alca women at their house. Did I want to come and see them? And so I had just a very few minutes to make up my mind, because they were in a hurry to get back before sundown, and it was a six-hour walk. I decided that this was the gate of the Lord and that I must enter it. And so it came about that I made contact with these two Alca women. I couldn't understand a word that they were saying. They couldn't understand a word that I was saying. But they seemed friendly enough, and the long and the short of the story, and I have to shorten it down, is that there was another killing right there in that Quechua village while we were there. A man was killed by the Aucas. They put 22 spears in his body, 3 spears in the dog, and they kidnapped his wife. Well, I and the Auca women were not on the scene at the moment, so they didn't see it and didn't know who had done it. But the Quechuas were terrified, and they said, "We must abandon this place. We must evacuate the village." And so the village was evacuated. And therefore, I took the 2 Auca women back to live where I had lived before, Shandia, with the Quechua Indians. And at the end of almost a year of living together in a Quechua house, I had learned just barely enough of their language to know that these women were asking me to go back with them when they went home again at the time of the ripening of the Chonta palm. Here was the miracle that I could never envision, the prayer which I certainly thought God was not going to answer being answered. Was it possible that God was going to ask me to go and live with the Aucas? Yes, it was possible. And I got to know the 5 men who had actually done the killing of the missionaries, and I learned from their very lips that the reason for the killing was that they had thought that the 5 missionaries were cannibals. Have you ever prayed any reckless prayers, thinking that surely God was not going to answer them? I bet a good many of you have prayed, "Thy will be done." Maybe you did it thoughtlessly in praying the Lord's Prayer, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." But you know, he might answer that prayer, and the chances are very good that he will answer it in ways that never occurred to you. Don't be surprised when he starts doing his will instead of yours.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliott has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.